Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Greater European Talks. I'm Eylül Erval. In this episode, we are going to talk about U.S. involvement in Ukrainian war. Today, we are joined by Carlos Halil. Hello, Carlos.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's great to have you here to talk about something so important. And this is the war in Ukraine, and it has quickly turned into a worldwide crisis. And the other day, the title of an article I read in the New Yorkers was "Ukraine is now America's war too." Do you, first of all, agree with that statement? And what does that mean then?
I very much agree with it. I would rather also expand the title and say that it's a worldwide crisis, because it has not only influenced several aspects of our daily lives, just to mention a few, energy and food prices, but also it has had very dramatic humanitarian and military consequences. So I very much agree. Just it's important to expand it. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. That's exactly how I feel. The US has become more deeply engaged in this war. So what kind of sanctions did the US impose on Russia? And when did it first happen?
The US first imposed sanctions on Russia when it annexed Crimea back in 2014. Obviously, further sanctions followed after the invasion last February, which some also apply on Belarus. The list of sanctions is very comprehensive, but to recap, the main ones include sanctions on and visa restrictions on Vladimir Putin and his inner circle, some Russian entities. Also financial sanctions on businesses linked to major Russian industries. So for example, in defense, energy, mining, telecommunications, transport, financial institutions, and others. The US also imposed a prohibition to invest in Russia and banned imports of oil, liquefied natural gas, and coal to the US. And lastly, in the technology sector, the US introduced export controls on key products, as for example, semiconductors, equipment for the Russian oil and gas industries, as well as software, even for exports to Russia from third countries that use those US inputs. So this is a quick overview of the sanctions, but of course, many others have been tabled.
Thank you. And what about the EU sanctions? How can we compare them?
So yeah, some US sanctions that I just mentioned have been coordinated with the EU and other G7 members. So for example, same as the EU, a major step was to block the reserves of Russia's central bank and cut off many banks from SWIFT. However, sanctions have come in different waves, and in some fields, the US has gone even further than Europe. This is because the European Union is more exposed to Russia in terms of energy supply and investment. To give some examples, the US banned all new investment in Russia, whereas Europe just in the energy sector. The US also prohibited all coal, LNG, and oil imports, but the EU only prohibited coal, other solid fossil fuels, and oil, the latter after the transitional phase of 6 to 8 months. And this was just announced a few weeks ago. Also, US export controls cover both Russian oil and gas sectors. However, the EU only targets oil plus technology and goods used for the liquefaction of natural gas. But again, gas per se is excluded due to Europe's exposure to Russia.
Wow, interesting. And President Joe Biden said in early March, direct confrontation between NATO and Russia is World War III, as you said in the beginning, and it is something we must strive to prevent. But in contrast, the US sounds more ambitious indeed, for example, in terms of military support. So I'd like to ask you, what kind of military support has the US given to Ukraine?
Yeah, so since 2014, back when Russia annexed Crimea, the US has given Ukraine over $4 billion US dollars in military aid. What's interesting is that out of that $4 billion, $3.7 have been given to Ukraine only since the start of the war in February. In terms of military equipment, the US has supplied Ukraine with equipment ranging from spare parts to make Ukrainian warplanes operational, heavy weaponry, for example, tanks, helicopters, anti-craft missiles, standard weapons, and so on and so forth. The US is also helping Ukraine transition to more advanced weapons and air defense systems that are at the level of NATO. However, this has particularly angered Russia. which has issued in turn several threats. And the US has also shared military intelligence with Ukraine, even since before the invasion of Ukraine, also in close cooperation with NATO.
Yeah, thank you. It was very insightful. And what about the support to the Ukrainian citizens? Because people are suffering and they are fleeing the war. So what did the US do for them?
Here it's very important to draw a distinction between financial and humanitarian support, although they're more or less related. So in terms of financial support, between the 2014 and 2021, so last year, the US donated more than $350 million in humanitarian aid to Ukraine, in part to support those affected by the pandemic, etc. But as for the support provided during the war, between February and March this year, the US spent $120 million to support the EU and neighboring countries to host Ukrainian refugees. Just to give some figures, I think the US gave approximately like $48 million to Poland, 10 to Romania, 9 to Hungary, and 4 to Slovakia. Then in terms of humanitarian support, the US announced on the 24th of March that it was preparing to host up to 100,000 Ukrainians and that it was prepared to provide additional humanitarian aid. Then in April, the US announced the creation of a program called Uniting Ukraine, which is a mechanism to basically resettle Ukrainians. The program is highly important because many Ukrainians have been trying to enter the US via Mexico, but this program has a major flaw, which is that Ukrainians applying to this program must have a sponsor in the United States who agrees to support them financially during their stay. So, of course, this requirement makes it almost impossible for many Ukrainians wishing to flee to the United States.
Thank you. I'm wondering if the US makes any propaganda against Russia in multilateral institutions. And especially we know that Russia recently withdrew from the Council of Europe. So what do you want to say about it?
The US has acted in several multilateral institutions, such as the UN, the ICJ, the WTO, and others. So I will briefly start with the UN. So one day after the invasion, the US co-submitted a United Nations Security Council resolution demanding Russia's withdrawal. However, Russia vetoed the resolution and a similar text was put to the United Nations General Assembly on the 2nd of March, which received a large majority of votes. But something that generated a lot of controversy from this vote was that the abstention of India and China. As a matter of fact, India's abstention angered many in Brussels, as the EU is currently trying to reapproach India and negotiate a trade agreement. But this is another topic. I will, however, continue with trade and focus now on the WTO. So the US joined the EU and other countries in declaring that they would cease to grant Russia WTO-derived trading privileges. This is also called the most favored nation principle. They also agreed on discontinuing work on Belarus WTO accession. It is also worth mentioning that Russia is currently considering withdrawing from the WTO, to which EU officials have reacted by saying, for example, oh yeah, this wouldn't be very bad news as there would be one less problematic member. However, Russia is still considering this as it would have dramatic economic and political implications for Russia. As for other multilateral settings, the US has expressed that Russia should be expelled from the G20. Again, some disagreements between countries prevent this from happening. And also the US joined other 90 countries in the UN to suspend Russia from the UN Human Rights Council. Lastly, very few words on the ICJ case, which was submitted by Ukraine, as it's still obviously ongoing. It is important to recall that Russia is not a party to the ICJ statute. However, the case submitted by Ukraine to the ICJ concerns the lack of compliance by Russia with the Genocide Convention, and the court decided back in March this year that it does have prima facie jurisdiction and issued a provisional order for Russia to stop its invasion. But as I said, the case is still ongoing, so the outcome is still to be seen.
So what is your expectation from the court then?
It's very difficult to predict, and it's a very complex case, and it involves many legal issues. So if I will have to draw a conclusion now, the court will eventually decide against Russia, but it depends on the article that they're discussing on the Genocide Convention, because it's a very sensitive matter. Yeah, it depends on how the case develops and the comments submitted by the parties throughout the process.
I agree with you. We will see in the upcoming days, hopefully. Thank you, Carlos. It was really amazing and very insightful conversation with you. Thank you for joining us. Is there anything you'd like to say as your last word?
Nothing to add. Just it was a pleasure to participate in the episode, and looking forward to the next one.
That's all for today. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to join one of our future episodes, please email us at podcast@institutegratiereurope.com.